Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Arseholics podcast. I think I started a bit early there. So just in case the beginning cut off. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Arseholics podcast. It's bank holiday Monday in the UK. Not a bank holiday everywhere. Well, I don't think it's a bank holiday most places, actually. Bank holiday Monday in the UK. So all the days are a little bit off. It feels like a Sunday night, but it's really a Monday night. With me to talk about what happened the weekend in terms of, you know, we can talk generally about what happened the weekend in terms of our lives. That would be pretty boring. But in terms of football specifically, and specifically Arsenal and their game against Man City, which was on Easter Sunday, I've got Aaron in with me. Hello, mate. You all right?
Good evening. Good evening. How are you?
Yeah, good. Good, 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 good. It's weird, right? Because obviously we played on Sunday, and usually Monday's a working day. And given the type of game it was, I would have probably been looking forward to like Monday podcasts and listening to kind of, you know, whatever analysis and debriefs and whatever, but not going to work and not having my usual commute. I guess that's all delayed until tomorrow. But it's been a nice long weekend, to be honest. And obviously it probably wouldn't have been as nice long weekend if we had lost. But yeah, what about yourself? How are you feeling?
Good. It's good. I'm very confused with what day of the week it is, like everyone probably in the UK. But it's been nice to have today where it kind of feels like there should be Premier League football on, but there isn't. And I know there's a lot of like Championship and League One, League Two games on today. But to just give us the space to really reflect on, you know, just for me to think about the game, think about, you know, what happened, where we are. And then bang, tomorrow is a full midweek schedule in the Premier League again, and we're just back into the mix of everything. And it's going to be like this a lot, right? So, you know, we're going to be playing pretty much every midweek between now and the end of the season, assuming we can, or hoping we can go far in the Champions League as well. So, yeah, it's been an interesting game. I mean, the game itself yesterday, look, it's... there probably isn't much point watching the highlights of the game, right? Because there weren't many highlights. It wasn't a game for match of the day, put it that way. But in terms of the result, the performance, the mental, psychological side of it, I think it was actually quite a big moment for us as a team. And yeah, it's one of those where it's like, okay, the performance not so interesting to watch, but what comes out of it could actually be quite consequential.
Yeah, I mean, on that, there was lots of talk after the game as to whether the game played out in the way that Arsenal planned it to play out in. There were some comments after the game from some of the players that indicated that actually, because of kind of City and what they do, we ended up playing a little bit, having to play a little bit deeper than we anticipated that we had to do. Do you think that was all kind of a bit of lip service? And in reality, do you think the game sort of panned out in the exact way that Arsenal prepared for it to pan out?
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. I think, you know, I remember we were chatting during the game and, you know, you and Myers very much said, like, this is the plan. At halftime, this is the plan. It's going well. And, you know, the plan is very much like, we can't be as intense in the press the whole game. So we kind of just let them come onto us a bit and see, you know, and just be solid, you know, probably go with a very low block and just see what we can do. I certainly think defensively that was the plan. I do think that I don't want to go into start on a negative, but I do think my one regret is I think we didn't show how good we could be going forward. Now, why that happened, a huge part of that is because it's Man City and they've got some bloody good defenders on the pitch. But I think it's a bit of a shame that although, you know, on paper, we had a fully fit squad bar Jurrien Timber, I think, it didn't feel like that. And I don't think it was. Right? I think we had an attack that was just lacking. I think there's a lot of factors there. I think the fact that this was just after the international break didn't help. You know, we had, you know, Saka who disappeared for 2 weeks and didn't really play much and came back from England and, you know, was a bit 50-50 if he would start or not. You know, Martinelli wasn't fully fit. Gabriel Jesus probably wasn't fully fit. Odegaard didn't really look like himself. Declan Rice had played two games. They played 180 minutes midweek. So it wasn't the ideal preparation. And I think that was probably where I say it wasn't the plan. I think the plan probably would have been to do a bit more going forward and make them worry a bit more going forward. I know we had our chances. JC's had a couple of chances. But I feel that maybe we would have wanted them to worry about us a bit more. But defensively, I think, yeah, we did our job. And we did our job really, really well. It's so good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to talk about that a little bit more. But, you know, just in terms of the plan and how it affected, I think probably one interesting thing to consider is, so all the points you made about the international break, I think are spot on. And particularly, I think people like Saka and Rice did look like they were pretty, pretty leggy. But we've not had to suffer off the ball like we did in the City game for any other game this season. And we know that when you're out of possession and you're chasing shadows, particularly against a team like City, it's really, really tiring. And Odegaard did actually say that, right? He sort of alluded to the fact that, you know, they were willing to suffer. They were willing to sit back, concede kind of possession. But what was difficult was in the moments where we had possession, because of the fatigue that you generate when you're out of possession, you know, he used the term heavy legs. The heavy legs sort of kick in, perhaps. And that perhaps got me thinking that maybe this was the plan. But then to your point, the execution of the attacking side of the plan was unable to happen because of the fatigue from the international break, but also the legginess that, you know, being, you know, out of possession probably, you know, impacted. It's hard to replicate that legginess, isn't it? You can prepare for it, you know, in some ways when you're on the training ground, but really the reality of it is there's no way that you could have trained an Arsenal team to replicate that match situation against a City team. You know, we don't have that City caliber of squad to play against in training. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not. So I wonder if that was it. So I think pretty sort of aligned with you there. And I wonder, mate, like, is it though, do we have to consider that there are going to be games like this, particularly in the Champions League, if we just sort of pivot to the Champions League, where ultimately we're probably only going to get like a, you know, 0.6 XG in some of these games, but you've still got to take some of those chances. You know, there was the ball that sort of went across that Jesus just missed when he slid in from Saka. There was a couple of chances, very half chances Jesus had. There was the Trossard one towards the end where, like, you know, if he hits it first time across to Martinelli, when you take that into account, do we have to sort of accept that actually that's probably all you can expect in an away game of a team of that caliber, and really we should have just done better with the chances?
Yeah, I think ultimately you probably do. And I think another day, if we had some more players who were just on their game a bit more, you know, I think Saka was just lacking something. Jesus, I'll be really interested to see what you think about Jesus' performance yesterday, because I think I've done like a full 360 on Jesus over the last 24 hours. And again, Havertz, Trossard when he came on, Martinelli when he came on, all of them, I think, put it this way, right? It'll be really interesting to see if we do end up playing them in the Champions League and we're going there 1-0 down, like from the first leg. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but let's just imagine we're going there away in the second leg, 1-0 down. Would we approach this game differently? I'm not sure we do. I still think Arteta probably says, look, the last thing you do is, and it's almost a bit like a second leg tie, that we kind of, the way we approach in this game is, the last thing you want to do is lose this game in the first 30 minutes of the 90. And you just want to go into that second half at 0-0, or even 1-0 up if you take a chance, but you don't want to be knocked out before you can really get going. Because in these big away games, like you said, you're not going to get an XG of 2 or 3. You're going to get, you know, 1 or 2 chances where they might be a bit scrappy and you're just relying on the player, right time, right finish to really make it count. And I think, look, and this has happened to us, right? Like, we've played well. Like, Anfield Anfield last year, was it last year? Anfield last year was the perfect example of this, right? Which is, you can't win these big games by just playing well in the first 20 or 30 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. You are going to get, as you said, you're going to suffer at some point. All right. And that suffering might be in the first 20 minutes. It might be in the first half. It might be in the second half, but you're going to suffer, right? And what if you do suffer in the first half? And I think we did suffer a little bit at times. You just need to make sure you don't lose it. And then if you're in the game, you just got to hope that some of these chances you can, you know, execute well, you pull off the right final pass, and then someone's in and they make the right decision. And it's, you know, we're looking at this result very differently. And I think, although we probably didn't have that many chances in the second half, there were a lot of, and this probably is reflected in the XG, there were a lot of times where I felt Odegaard was, you know, got free, had a bit of space and just couldn't pull off the right pass.
Yeah.
Or City blocked that final ball in behind. And, you know, there was one I remember where he played Havertz in, but Havertz just couldn't make the run at the right time. And then I think Odegaard was pretty annoyed with Havertz at that point. Where, like, on another day, I think there is every chance we could have been walked away yesterday with a win. And I genuinely think, if Saka was just a bit fit, if we had some runners, if we had a bit more pace, if we had Martinelli fully fit, and I know they had injuries and all that stuff too, but if we showed our best self, not even our best self, but if we showed what we normally show going forward, and we have done this season going forward, I think we win that game and we actually probably win it comfortably. I think the frustration is that whilst we showed what we're capable of defensively, it just, for various reasons, wasn't one of our best attacking performances. And that, I'm just like, oh, what if? But don't get me wrong, I think a point there is still a bloody good result. And
yeah,
we should celebrate it. And I think what annoys me is like the online discourse that happens after these games. There's always some nonsense that's going around about how we should have gone for more. And like, I'm just like, I think that's nonsense. We played the right game plan. We did the right things. On another day, we might have won it. We could have lost it, but we've come out of there thinking like, all right, we are as good as them. And I think for us, that's huge. For us as fans as well, right? Maybe I don't know if the players suffer this, right? But when we went there last time, they made us look very, very silly. Yeah. And, you know, we were the young team who were going there as, you know, title, you know, challenges, and they were like, no, you're not. That's basically what happened last season, right? Yeah, exactly. They were like, don't be silly. You're not going to win this title.
They sliced us like butter when they wanted to at the key moment.
I know there were circumstances, right? The injury was a big one, but this year they didn't do that, right? And we almost made them look a bit silly. And that's a place where City score, I can't remember, I think you and Myers shared it, like City score,
like 57 games or something like this.
57 games, and they couldn't do it against us. And yeah, I think we should be proud, right? It's the hardest. Every game that we play after this is going to be easier than that. This is the hardest fixture that pretty much in European football. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you can't complain about a point.
Yeah, you're spot on. The hardest fixture in European football. And, you know, you come out with a clean sheet and a better XG than your opponent. I mean, do you know what I mean? It's objectively incredibly impressive. And, you know, just expanding on a couple of things that you said, I agree, like, you know, all of this talk about, oh, we should have approached the game differently. I understand why there are some people who say that. And because I think the temptation there is to say, oh, because they had injuries to Edison, to Stones, to Walker, we should have gone for it. But I fully disagree with that narrative, because if anything, actually, therefore, what we did was probably the right thing to do. Because really, in that situation, that's a depleted back five, right? But in reality, the rest of City's unit was, you know, as good as it could be. And the defensive structure, therefore, overall, and the defensive behaviours of their team and their ability to counter and just, sorry, in the other phases of play, was just as good. So if we had gone for it, we would leave ourselves incredibly exposed to getting picked off in other areas of the pitch. And so you could argue that actually our strategy of thinking, do you know what, we'll probably get one or two chances, particularly because their back five is depleted, means our strategy was probably the right one, actually, more so, I suppose. And ultimately, like you said, like these big games, Arsenal have lost so many of these types of big games because for like 20 minutes or 10 minutes, they've just not focused. And that doesn't necessarily have to be in a period. That's, in like small increments, they've just lost focus, lost whatever. And we didn't do that. So it's huge for us. It's massive. It's a massive, massive thing. And it's, as you said, it's the hardest fixture that we have in the run-up. Now, there are some tough ones, but this is the hardest. So it will give us confidence. Just Russ in the comments here, saying I felt we were too slow on the counter. And I think that's what, we were sort of saying at the beginning, perhaps. That's partly just because of the fatigue that came from the international duty, but also just, from not having the ball for so much. Aaron, talk to me a little bit, mate, about Saliba and Gabriel. Let's acknowledge the fact there was an incredible defensive performance all around. And I know that you wanted to talk about Jesus, so perhaps we'll come back onto that. But Gabriel and Saliba, they are getting all kinds of plaudits after this game. From non-Arsenal fans, because obviously, we have seen them all season and we've known how great they are all season, but they're getting these plaudits because ultimately for the third time this season, if you include the Community Shield, they have rendered Erling Haaland totally irrelevant. It's not even a supply issue. It wasn't even a case where it's, actually the midfield cut off the supply to him. No, they rendered him irrelevant aerially on the ground, were totally dominant, interchanging with this kind of one of them getting close to him, the other one being free. It wasn't even like one of them had the duty to do that. They were rotating that responsibility and both equally dominating him on the ground and in the air. This is arguably the best striker in the universe. Probably him and Harry Kane, you'd say, are the two best out and out centre forwards in the world. So with all that being said, what do you have to say about Saliba and Gabriel, mate?
Not much more than that, to be honest. It was so good to watch. I know, like, when we think about Arsenal Football Club, right? I think a lot of us our age, we think of the Wenger, peak Wenger, beautiful attacking football, right? But there's something very, almost beautiful to watch when you see those two defend. To see an Arsenal team have the best defense in the league, to see have the best centre back pairing in the league, in my opinion, is phenomenal. And I know that the reason our defensive record is so good isn't just because of them, right? And I think we've said a lot, right? We've almost got like these almost multiple lines of defense. It starts with like Havertz and Odegaard, up front, and the wide players working hard. Then you've got Declan Rice, you've got to get past, right? And then you've got to get past the two centre-backs, right? But I think yesterday was one where it doesn't matter who you've got in front of them, you need two bloody good centre-backs to just deal with Haaland and De Bruyne and everyone else as well, right? And they just did. They did. They were just like, this is... whatever happens, we are going to deal with him. And I think you do it once and you think, okay, well, all right, maybe Haaland's having an off day, right? You do it twice and you're like, hang on a second. Maybe there's something here. But to do it three times against the best striker in the world, a guy who makes defenders look silly, is just a huge, huge statement. And it was just, I just loved that moment at the end where Gabriel was basically just mouthing off to Haaland and he was just like, okay, we'll see you next time. Hopefully we'll see them again. Hopefully not, but we might see them again. And there might be a fourth and a fifth time that they're going to have to do it and deal with him, right? But he's going to be fed up, right? And he's going to have to play them again, hopefully for like three or four or five seasons, right? Yeah. And he will score at some point, annoyingly, but he probably, like, I don't know if he has a mental list of like the defenders and defenses he doesn't want to play against, but if he does, I can guarantee you Gabriel and Saliba are top of that list, because he absolutely just hated it, and he can tell he was getting frustrated, and the more he was getting frustrated, the more Gabriel was enjoying it. And yeah, I just love that. I think Saliba is like this calm,
yeah,
like what they call it, the Rolls Royce of defending, right? But Gabriel is just like this, I don't know what, I don't know how you
it's
describe
like a street,
it.
It's like a street, it's like a bit of a street fighter. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. The street fighter of defense. And he doesn't care what he looks like. He doesn't care if it's elegant. He just wants to deal with it. And yeah, and he's having a phenomenal season. And it's so good to see.
Yeah, that verbals that you were talking about, that was almost throughout the game, right?
Yeah.
Gabriel was and him were sort of going out. I feel like he's one of those defenders that gets the best out of him. You know, yeah. I think he likes being that guy, right? Like that. And like you say, it's just phenomenal to see. And, you know, this is the other thing that's awesome about it is like Haaland is that sort of center forward where he's able, because of his attributes, to just negate defensive frameworks and tactics that people use against him, like the kind of way that, you know, you see these teams set up, they do all the right things, but he does something via his strength or his kind of just awkward movement or his like speed of thought, like that just, it just negates everything. But it never felt like he did anything ever that was one step ahead of anyone. In fact, you probably argue he had that sort of half semi chance towards the back end of the second half, where I think it was a corner and then someone headed it across and he kind of, had his movement been a little bit better, he probably would have been able to get to it and maybe get a shot, you know, a tight shot in against Rea. But it felt like he was so almost demoralized during the game through just the lack of the lack of opportunity he was getting, that he was almost surprised that he moved way too slow. And he got a really harsh assessment from Roy Keane, you know, on Sky Sports. I don't know if you saw that, but like Roy Keane was just scathing about him.
And did he say, that as an example, apparently he said that Haaland was basically playing like a League Two striker or something like that.
Yeah, but basically he just said that he was just slating everything about Haaland's game outside of sort of, you know, scoring goals in the sense that he was like, this effectively magnified that. He's like, if you're a center forward, like you've got to be able to do all these other things. And he's obviously this elite goal scorer, but those other things he doesn't really do. But in a game like this, if you're not scoring, you know, he's basically like, he just looked like a League Two player. He just looked so like out of place. Cause he just, because he wasn't, you know, doing the scoring goals bit. These guys just made him look silly. Do you think those two getting huge plaudits, arguably the best centre-back pairing on the planet right now, Kivior and Ben White also, you know, had a lot to do, and maybe this sort of brings us a little bit onto the sort of Jesus topic tangentially in a second, because, you know, clearly the wingers had instructions to really help the fullbacks even more than usual, against City. There was a lot of doubling up, and Jesus is obviously an excellent defensive forward. But do you think that it's time that we gave our sort of current set of fullbacks, let's say, you know, it's been Kivior and Ben White since the turn of the year, basically, should they be getting their flowers for the defensive work that they've been doing? And I feel like very particularly Ben White is someone who just seems to go underrated constantly for just putting in solid performances week in, week out.
Yeah, I think Ben White was probably actually one of our best players yesterday, I thought, in terms of he did his job defensively, but he also tried to put a shift in going forward. And I think he found that space, and he really did try to release Saka a few times. And it goes back to that frustration that Saka just wasn't on it. I don't know if that was fitness injury or whatever it was, but he just didn't make the most of it. And I think he did a really good job on De Bruyne for a good 30, 40 minutes in the first half. They looked like City might have changed a few things. But no, I think he was really good. And then Kivior, again, I know he came off after, what was it, like 50 minutes when I think Doku came on. But he had a he had some moments where he was a bit exposed. I think that's fair to say. But again, you don't keep a clean sheet at City for 50, 60 minutes unless you have a really good back four, because if anyone is really, really weak, they would expose that weakness. And someone pointed out to me that, 2 years ago, Kiwi was actually playing in the Slovak Superliga.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's like, and now he's dealing with, like, he had to deal with Bernardo Silva, he had to deal with De Bruyne at times when he went over there, he had to deal with Haaland, he had to deal with, you know, the elite of Man City, and he did a decent job. But I think all of them were good. I think Raya as well, like, didn't have a lot to do in terms of shot stopping, but again, the way he commands his box, the way he dealt with some of those set pieces, I think his kicking sometimes wasn't great. Apparently the pitch was off there. His kicking was a bit off, but look, I think, again, I say it again, you don't keep a clean sheet, you don't stop City scoring for the first time in what's probably 2 years at home if you have mugs at the back. And they all did a decent job. What did you think? Like, what did you think of Kibio? Was it?
I definitely thought that he struggled, but I think that the tactic of having our wingers sort of double up was ultimately really effective. And I think we should always remember Kibio. Not only is he a young player, not only is he like relatively new to the league, but he's not a left back. Like he's a centre back. And so you're being asked to play left back for a team that is required to win basically every game and compete at the very, very, very highest level. Any mistake you make is going to get magnified. And I think just with that as a context, I just have so much love for the guy, because I feel like he's just put in as solid a performance every game as you could expect a guy like him to do under the circumstances. So I've got a lot of love for him, and I do genuinely, it does excite me to some extent to see a player like that who's at the club, who I think over the years could end up becoming a really, really kind of valuable player for us. And I think Ben White is just, for me, he just feels like he's one of these guys who just as a sort of player, it feels like he's sort of an 8 out of 10 at a lot of things. And maybe in the physicality stuff, he's not incredibly quick, he's not incredibly strong. But because there isn't anything that he's necessarily a 9 or a 10 at, no one really talks about him outside of, you know, Arsenal fans. Like, he doesn't really, you know, there are quicker fullbacks. There are fullbacks who are a more potent goal scoring threat. You know, there are ones who are incredible passers of the ball. He's not the top of the list at any of those things, but it's just the consistency that he gives and just the no complaints. And I think that kind of winning mentality, that attitude that he has is just phenomenal. Before I think we should pivot to like maybe bigger picture stuff. I do want to talk to you about Jesus, because I know you felt like you really wanted to talk about him very quickly. Russ, in his comments again, he says if Liverpool played City yesterday and drew, it would have been seen as a massive achievement. Levels. Russ, you're completely right. And in fact, a lot of people have, particularly Liverpool fans, have come out and sort of criticized Arsenal's approach, saying, you know, like, at least when Liverpool go to City, they're adventurous. Fine. They have their way of playing. But ultimately, even when they went to City this season, they had a lower XG than we did. So say what you want, you know, maybe they would have been more adventurous, but when they were this season, they weren't a more potent goal-scoring threat than we were, basically. So, but I completely agree with you. Talk about Jesus, mate, because you said you sort of went back and forth on your analysis and your feeling of whether he played well or not. Tell me more, and I'll give you my thoughts.
Yeah, I think if initially, when I thought about Jesus, right, in the game, the thing I think about with Jesus is there's two or three half chances. He had that one where he kind of just snatched up that shot in the near post and kind of went, put it just wide. He had that bit where he was played in by Saka and he couldn't get at the end of it. And I think that was a tough one. And then you had that chance where he kind of turned about 50, what seemed like 15 times on the outside of the box. And then I think put a shot wide. And then based on that, you're just like, what is he doing? Like, that's really frustrating. But he was brought in as the replacement for Martinelli, right? And I think he actually just worked his ass off yesterday. He had a job to do because, again, Kiwior wasn't having the best game defensively at times. And he did sacrifice a lot to just run back. And I think if you watch the highlights, Jesus is often like helping out defensively, and then he just isn't able to really influence the game. And I think my frustration with him yesterday was, come on, this is our 50 plus million striker. You know, what, so the guy is supposed to be our main guy, the guy who, when you go away to these big grounds, the experience, the Premier League title winner, to kind of just lead our charge. And I felt that was a bit lacking. But again, I think it's, when I watched it back and I saw the highlights, I think he really did sacrifice himself for the team. And I'd be really interested to see if another game where he's, when we play that same front three, if we can, maybe Luton, we might see it again, where we play Havertz up front in a more traditional number nine role. And again, I think Havertz similar, right? I think he really worked hard, but just City dealt with him really well. But I would love to see Jesus in that wide role, because I think I've said it here before, I think his future for us is going to be as a wide player. And to see how he can really influence the game, because I think on another day, again, one of those shots goes in, he puts one of those in, I think we're talking everyone's talking about a very different Jesus performance. Because then people say, oh, he was working really hard, he didn't do anything, but he had that one chance, he took the chance and he got us a goal and he won us a game. And it's a shame he didn't do that. But initially, I was pretty frustrated and actually quite pleased when he came off. But I actually think he did a lot in the 60 or 70 minutes that he was on the pitch.
Yeah, completely agree with pretty much everything you said. Because he even said in his post-match, he sort of said, look, as any forward, you'd rather, you know, not spend so much time defending, but we had to do it. And what I like about Jesus is, I imagine a lot of players would say that and acknowledge that, but in reality, sticking to the task for that entire time you're on the pitch is something that most don't do. I mean, all the managers that I've heard who have managed Jesus in the past have called him out as being one of the best defensive forwards in the world. You know, so there's something extraordinarily good about that element of his game. One of the reasons I agree with you about his future perhaps being wide is, in the system that we seem to play, that doesn't really prevent his opportunity to come centrally. Because against City, like, you know, he was effectively the one who was kind of our most potent goal threat. He was the one that was sort of coming into those dangerous areas in the box. And I think he would love that. So him playing wide, I don't think is something that he would kind of sit there and go, oh no, you know, I want to play centre forward. In fact, I think there's probably an argument to say that he seems a little bit more comfortable playing in those wide areas, which I think is an interesting question, which we will probably never know as to if Martinelli was fully fit, like, and you know, wasn't allegedly kind of, you know, still recovering a bit from his foot injury. If he was, would Jesus have still started anyway, given the game? I don't know the answer to that, but
well, what do you do, right? So I'm not gonna let you get away with that one. So let's say Luton, Martinelli's fit, Havertz is fit, Jesus is fit, and say Saka's fit.
Yeah. Okay.
Who do you play?
So I have a get out for this, because even before you asked that question, my thought about the Luton game was I'd actually like us to rest Havertz.
Okay, fine. Brighton.
it's a toughie. It's really tough. I feel like in your hypotheticals, I'll answer your hypothetical scenario, because I don't think the actual scenario is going to unfold. But in your hypothetical scenario, I think against Luton, if everyone was fit, then I actually think that Havertz could probably be benched. But I think that against Brighton, it might be better for Havertz to be there as a centre forward and playing Martinelli and Saka and not start Jesus.
Well, you don't necessarily have to bench Havertz. You could just bench Jorginho if you wanted.
You could. I agree. But now Partey's fit, I feel like that's you know, I see Havertz less and less kind of playing in that kind of central midfield role, assuming kind of everyone else is fit. But I think, mate, I think there's a thing. I think, like, we're going to see so much rotation. We're not for sure, but if everyone is fit, we will see rotation. But ultimately, I think there'll be some rotation from just kind of fatigue from kind of particularly the forward line. But like, I'm super intrigued as to what Arteta sees Jesus's future as, kind of a bit more holistically, because he may look at it and he may think that if he ends up needing to sell one or two players, is Jesus still a very viable sale? Right. You know, he's one of those players that I wonder if he sticks out as someone who he goes, well, you know, maybe I have wingers I prefer, and maybe I have centre forwards I prefer, and maybe I can get a lot of money from. So I don't know. Maybe that's a topic for another day. Can we reflect more generally? How do you feel this leaves us, mate? So, you know, let's get the old table up. I think I basically know it off the top of my head anyway, but I think there's essentially 2 points that separates Liverpool from Arsenal. Yeah, that's correct. So 2 points that separates Liverpool from Arsenal at the top, and then 1 point between Arsenal and Man City. So Liverpool on 67, Arsenal on 65, Man City on 64. Everyone's played 29 games, and none of those teams are playing one another anymore. How do you feel at this point? The Opta kind of predictor that they talked about on Sky Sports essentially now has Liverpool, I think, as the favourites, with City as second favourites and Arsenal as third favourites. How do you call it?
Oof, I have no clue, honestly. I think the nightmare scenario, not nightmare scenario, but what I worry about is that Man City and Liverpool could win every game from now until the end of the season. They could. And that would be really, really annoying. I don't know what would be more annoying. Like, us losing it because Man City and Liverpool won every game. Like, and if Liverpool won every game, they will be top, right? And if Liverpool do that, then you kind of just have to take your hat off and say, like, fair play, you've just won what's probably going to be 14, 15 games in a row. Or they drop points and then we also drop points, because you look at the games that we have left, again, like the other two, we're going to be favourites going into every one of those games. I think including Spurs away, including Man United away, Chelsea at home, will be favourites to win all of them. And it's, I think what I'm actually a lot more confident now, famous last words. I think it was Nero actually that said, like, oh yeah, we're probably going to have to win every game from now until the end of the season to have a chance. I'm actually a little bit more confident that we can do that. Mm. Because I think if we keep our players fit with the squad that we have, the players coming back, the rotational options, you can see us doing that. The one thing that might stop us is the Champions League. Because we could have, you know, well, we will have an away leg against Bayern Munich that we're going to have to deal with in between some tough games. Then we get past that, we're going to either have to go back away to the Etihad or, again, potentially the Bernabeu, and have to deal with that and all of the emotional overhead that comes with a potential Champions League semi-final, or the emotional overhead of a potentially going out in the Champions League to Bayern Munich. And again, that is very, very new for this team. I think this team has shown that it can learn from its mistakes, and it can show that, okay, yeah, we got laughed at the Etihad last season. We're not going to get laughed at. We're not going to mess that up. We're going away and dealing with, like, a Southampton at home, I don't think is going to happen again this season. Mm-hmm. But we don't know, and we've never had to deal with a title race and be in a Champions League quarterfinals, potentially semifinals at the same time. And that period, that latter part of April, that, or just generally, like, yeah, the latter part of April when we're going to have a second leg at Bayern and how we deal with that, I'm not so sure we have the emotional capability to deal with that. Now, the good thing is City have a Champions two-leg tie against Real Madrid to deal with. And Liverpool have got the Europa League to deal with as well. And I know that's a game, and you know, I know that's a competition where you can rotate a bit, and you know, people might say, oh well, they can rest Salah, they can rest Nunes if they have to. But yeah, we've been there, right? We've been there. We've seen how annoying it is to go Thursday, mm-hmm. Sunday. You still have to train, you still have to prepare. And Salah will still play some minutes. It's not like he's gonna just be on holiday for a sure. week and then come back.
And you're playing against teams who, you know, this is everything for them. Yep. You know.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're not, you know, there's no easy games. They'll be easier than playing Real Madrid by Munich, of course, but they're gonna have to do that. And then I tweeted, right? And I think the other interesting thing is they've got, you know, a good few away games to come, right? Like Liverpool have got that run in where they've got Fulham, Everton and West Ham away and then Tottenham at home. I'm sure there's probably going to be some Europa League games there as well. So, well, mate, I don't know. I don't think Liverpool will win every game. I think they will drop points. My worry is City have got the easiest run on paper. I was just looking. They've got, yeah, Brighton, Forest, Wolves, Fulham, West Ham, and then Tottenham at some point. Potentially the last midweek of the season, right? And, yeah, there's a situation there where, you know, Tottenham have European qualifications sorted. Do they win a game to basically potentially give us a huge lift in the title race, or are they just like, actually sod this, I can't be bothered? We actually probably need Tottenham to be in the race for the top four, top five, all the way till the end of the season.
And it looks like but here's a problem. It's also a weird one, isn't it? Right, because we do, and it looks like they will, but therefore, we also kind of need Man United to give them a realistic challenge. And at the moment, and that's Villa as an well. Issue. Yeah. But my assumption is that Villa and Tottenham are fourth and fifth right now, right? And there's actually like that delta that's built to Man United. And Man United, for example, against Brentford, looked absolutely dog shit, right? Now, if that trend continues, there'll probably be a massive gap. There may end up being a massive gap before we know it between fifth and sixth. And that's not good for us, right? So it is a bit of a weird one. I mean, this is again in this assumption that, you know, that fifth will get that Champions League place. And I wonder, and I'm kind of hoping that the managers and the clubs just are so anxious around it, and because it's the first time ever and haven't quite figured it all out yet, that they kind of go, look, we can't rely on finishing fifth, and therefore it's still basically a real dogfight for fourth, in which case I think that's a great outcome for us. But like, I fully agree. It feels to me like the game that we had against City, for me, in my opinion, the outcome of that game was less relevant for how this title will be decided than two factors. One, injuries, how, you know, the various squads cope with injuries from now until the end of the season, given like the various fixtures, competition, etc. But the second bit is what all those teams that we're playing against have playing for, if that makes sense. Sorry, you know, those teams that we are playing against, all three, Liverpool, Man City and Arsenal, at the points of the time over the next 2 months when we play those teams, are they still fighting for something? That I think will be a huge factor in this. And it's just too many permutations. That's why, like, you know, to your point about saying, you know, you don't know where the title's going to land, I don't either, because every kind of set of scenarios I think about are like mitigated or made more complex by a different set of scenarios regarding one of the other clubs involved. So, you know, part of me thinks, for example, that the best thing for us is Man City carrying on in the Champions League as far as they can possibly go in terms of our league kind of campaign. That's the best thing. But then a part of me kind of goes, actually, no, because, you know, let's just say hypothetically, if we go and play Man City in the semi-finals of the Champions League, and if we lose, then I can imagine that mentally affecting us, that taking out a lot of us. But then equally, I wonder if whether we do have the squad and just the mental kind of capacity to fight on both fronts. All those things, like, you know, there's so many different scenarios. And then you add the Liverpool scenario, which is just really interesting because there's three teams involved. So it's just too hard to call for me.
Yeah, I agree. I even, you know, I was doing exactly that the other day, where I was just trying to go through all the teams and trying to work out, will they have something to play for when we play them? And then the problem is that, again, because we're all actually like playing a lot of similar teams, I think we all have to play Tottenham. We all have to play Villa. Both us and Liverpool have to play Everton. Both us and Liverpool have to play Man United still. And what you don't want, again, is you want these teams, Everton, we've got Everton on the last day. We don't want them to be in a relegation dogfight when we play them, right? Yeah, I think, Liverpool have got Wolves on the last day and Man City have got West Ham. Both those teams will be on the beach on the last day, right? So that's 3 points, almost guaranteed. I know Wolves have an outside chance of Europe, but they seem to be dropping and they kind of almost seem to be on the beach already sometimes. And then, I was just looking at our fixtures. You know, we've got, again, Luton. Right now, I think the next 3 or 4 or 5, no team is going to be on the beach yet, right? But then we've got, Tottenham, Bournemouth, Man United, Everton. You kind of hope Bournemouth, by the time we play them, hopefully they would have found enough points to, just edge themselves away from that relegation battle. But then, Spurs are going to be... Spurs are Spurs. You know, we play them the last day of the season. It's still going to be a tough game. But then Man United, Everton, what we really want is at that point for Man United to be too far off fifth place.
Managerial situation being really ambiguous. Players perhaps, just thinking where they're going to play next season. Yeah, exactly.
But then the downside of that is, like you say, Raj, if Man United are far away, then it probably means that Spurs, when they play City, are probably less worried about it, right? So all these things, all these permutations. Let's see. I think I'll be very surprised if Liverpool win every game. I wouldn't be surprised if City win every game because of their fixture list. But I've just watched the last few Liverpool games, and like Charles says, are the gods tired of Liverpool winning from losing positions yet? They are, they're creating chances. They're doing well, but their defense is not great. They concede goals and they are sometimes just scraping past opponents. And again, I go back to those 3 away games in Villa. Hopefully one of those just becomes another game where they're just not able to scrape that goal back, or they get an injury or something like that. I think there's a long way to go, unfortunately, for us emotionally. And it's going to be a very stressful 6-7 weeks, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Charles's point, if we flip that perspective slightly, Liverpool are the team that are most likely to require, I guess, coming back from behind and stuff like that. Because like you mentioned, they're it feels like to me when I watch Liverpool, they've looked at it and they've gone, our best chance of winning the major honours this year is carrying on doing the things that we are good at from an attacking perspective and banking and doubling down and not trying to mitigate perhaps any defensive deficiencies. We just go for it. And fair play. And I think that's probably the right thing to do. Don't get me wrong. But I think you'd hope there's going to be one or two of these games, like you mentioned, where a team will probably just score one too many goals for them to come back from. So you're right. And Charles, Charles has got another comment here. Does the Etihad performance give us heart? Does it give heart to us fans about the Allianz Arena scenario? It fills me with confidence. 6 line shut up shop against Koeman Sane. First 45 minutes easy. I hear you, Charles. And you know what? We obviously will properly preview that game when it comes about. But I certainly think that the performance against Man City was a very Champions League type performance, which does fill me with confidence around how we can navigate these ties against big teams. Aaron, let's spend a bit of time talking about our next fixture though, right? In classic cliche fashion, take every fixture as it comes. Let's just talk about this next fixture against Luton. So just to begin, so we play Luton. Remind me, who does everyone else play midweek?
Liverpool play Sheffield United at home on Thursday, I think. And
City got Villa at home.
Which again is not a walk in the park, right?
Not a walk above.
I think annoyingly Watkins might limped off at the weekend with an injury at halftime.
That's true.
Which I think Emery was saying it might be a hamstring or something like that. So we'll find out, I guess, Tuesday or Wednesday what's going on with him. But that is, yeah, that's annoying more than anything. But no, I think this of all weeks is almost like, I could regret saying this, but this is probably the least, going to be the least dramatic round in terms of the title race, where I think I'm fairly confident
Liverpool will batter Sheffield United, terrible.
Luton, again, not a walk in the park, but you would expect us to beat Luton. And then I do think Man City at home to Villa, again, we'll deal with them, I think. But again, that's definitely the hardest three, right? But no, I think, look, Luton, look, we should win. Right? There's no two ways about it. I think the question you're about to ask me is, can we rest? Can we rotate? And how much can we rest or rotate? And I'm not sure we should. Like, well, I guess it's, can we rest because it's Luton, or should we rest because we have to rest, or we should rest? And I think it's more the latter. I don't think we should underestimate Luton and say it's only Luton we should play. We should play, you know, I don't know who we play with, Cedric or something like that. But there are probably a couple of players who you say, actually, they probably can't play three games in the space of 7-8 days. And actually, regardless of if it's Luton, if it's Villa, if it's, you know, Man United at home, maybe we rotate regardless, right? And I think there's probably a few, right? Saka's the interesting one. I've seen a lot of people say that he should be rotated. I disagree. I would play Saka.
Okay.
Assuming he's because I think Arteta said he came off for fatigue reasons rather than anything else. Assuming he's not carrying anything more than the knock that he's apparently been carrying for a while, I would just give Saka 60 minutes and try and win this game within the first 60 minutes and then take players off.
Okay.
Rather than risk rotating too much and then risk it becoming a nervy game. Because we've actually shown this season that, you know, when we're on it, and when Saka's on it, when Havertz is on it, when Rice and Odegaard are on it, we can make anyone look silly in 45 minutes. And I'd rather do that and then deal with Saturday and the squad, getting the squad ready for Saturday, rather than anything else. Well, what would you do?
I would rest Saka.
Who would you play instead?
Sorry, I may actually play Jesus on the right.
Okay.
It's two options, right? I would either play Jesus on the right and play Havertz up top and play kind of one of Martinelli or Trossard on the left, like, or I would genuinely kind of go with Jesus, Trossard, and Martinelli playing across that three and rest Havertz and Saka both. Luton are actually a really fun team, right? This season, I think, you know, objectively, they've been like a fun team. Out of those three teams that came up, they're definitely the most interesting one. They're the ones I think that a lot of neutrals are sort of rooting for, because they seem to like really kind of be incredibly spirited, incredibly ambitious every game they go into. But they've pulled off some decent results this season. But they're actually in a bit of a bad run of form themselves, actually. I think that like something like in the last 9 games, they've lost 6 and drawn 3, I think, something like this. They they're not in a great place. And obviously they also, I think they were 3-0 up against Bournemouth, right? And Bournemouth won 4-3. Their away record is not good. But the thing is that they score like pretty much every game they score. So yeah. I just looked at it now. And I think since like the back end of September, right? Since the back end of September, they've only not scored in 2 games. Like, that's mad for a team that's like down at the bottom.
Yeah.
So I think, like, you know, it's not, I feel like it's probably a game where we need a settled back five and we need kind of, you know, our defensive kind of stability in place like we have anyway. I'm not sure it's a game that I would rest, not that we can really rest any of the back five, like, because I don't really think we have the squad options unless we decide to put Zinchenko as left back, for example, which isn't quite resting. But I think up top, mate, like, you know, we've said it, Saka looked tired. And he went off and Arteta said he looked fatigued. Like, if we can't give him a break from starting in a game like this, like, we're never going to be able to do it. And I hear you about the kind of putting a game to bed, but when is a Premier League really, a game really put to bed anyway, like particularly against a team like Luton, like we just said, who kind of want to score. So, you know, I don't know, if we go two goals up, you know, is it really put to bed? I'm not sure, but I think that we've got to back ourselves, right, to be able to, like, beat a team like Luton, or respect to Luton, without Saka, you know, and arguably a tired Saka. We should be able to do it, I think. So I would rest him. I don't think he will do this in terms of the lineup that I've sort of suggested, but I would personally, if I was Arteta, like to see him go with Jesus, Martinelli, Trossard as our kind of front three in any sort of particular kind of order. And I know that might sound a bit weird because we've not really, I don't think we've played that this season. But I think, again, it's just another set of combinations that I think on paper, I don't really see why it couldn't work. We could keep the kind of Jorginho and Rice in the centre of midfield to keep that kind of familiarity. Although, like, I think there's probably an argument to say, you know, can Jorginho play two games a week? Is this a game where we kind of, where we put Partey in, for example? So I don't know. There's also Fabio Vieira to think about. I mean, he's probably fully fit now, I expect. There's Emile Smith Rowe. I know there are things. I mean, I know we discussed a little bit on the last episode around, you know, whether Arteta just basically tries as much as possible to just play his best available team all the time. Are you still sort of in that camp?
Yeah, although I was. But you've almost convinced me, actually, the other way around. I actually quite like, now you mention it, I quite like the idea of Gabriel Jesus on the right-hand side. I wouldn't change much else. I would still play one of Martinelli or Trossard. I think we'd probably need to give Martinelli some more minutes if he's fit. So I would say Martinelli, Havertz, Jesus. And then I would say Partey in for Jorginho. Because again, it's not that Jorginho probably does, maybe could benefit from the rest, because again, not sure he can hack two games a week and every week for the next 6 or 7 weeks. But I think we do need to get Partey some minutes, because he actually showed when he came on that he was, like, some of the passes he was playing, like, just the speed at which he would just get that ball forward, just beat the press and just find the spacing. You know, that break that Trossard had just came from what looked like actually quite a simple pass from Partey, but the speed at which he played it into Odegaard, the positioning and where Odegaard was, the way he received it, allowed him to just set Trossard off. And Jorginho can't do that, right? Jorginho is very good at a lot of things, but he is not as good. You know, we've kind of discussed this before, right? You've got Rice and you've got Partey, and Jorginho is kind of that in-between guy. You can kind of do a bit of everything. But no one can do those Thomas Partey things as good as Thomas Partey can. And I think this is probably the game. I wouldn't start Partey away at Brighton, but I would actually start him on Wednesday, sorry. So yeah, I would bring in... Yeah. But apart from that, I wouldn't change the back four. Do you think Saliba, Gabriel play every game from now until the end of the season?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, 100%. Like, I think he'll bank on that. I can't see any scenario where he doesn't. I think he'll know that if one of them gets injured and he has to deal with it, and maybe kind of, you know, maybe we come out okay. I mean, it's hard to imagine us coming out okay if one of them gets injured early on in this 2-month period. But I think he'll probably feel like, look, if I really had to, I could have Ben White as centre back if I really had to, or I'll go back to that three at the back formation that I tried to sort of bleed in at the beginning of the season. I think he'd probably do those things. I think he plays him. Yeah. Or Tomiyasu. But just to kind of, one thing I was going to ask you before you asked me that question was, do you think there's any argument to rest Declan Rice against Luton?
No, I think he's too important. He's in the same category for me as Gabriel and Saliba.
Right, okay. So you play Declan Rice every game for the rest of the
season? Until the game is won, right? Like if we go 3-4-0 up, then yeah, take him off. Bring on Jorginho, play him alongside Thomas Partey, or bring on one of the others that are not playing. I think us as fans, we're like, I don't know what, I think we do this more than anyone else, is that we're obsessed with like resting players. Yeah. I think it's just because like Emery or Wenger, like we've always like overplayed players and we have all these fatigue injuries, but these players, and Arteta said it so many times, right? He's like, I want players in the business end of the season playing Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, or whatever it is, right? Because that's what the best players in the world do. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, you know, when Liverpool were chasing the title in the Champions League, Salah played every game. Van Dijk, when he was fit, played every game. You just, like you said, if you get an injury, you have the squad to deal with it. And you don't take silly risks, right? But unfortunately, when you're in a title race, every game is important. And I know you're going to say, yeah, it's Luton at home, probably one of the easiest games of the season. But win the game and then rest whoever you want. But no, I think, again, it goes back to, I don't think we should rest players. I think there's actually a bigger case for should we give some of the squad minutes? Partey needs minutes. Zinchenko probably needs minutes. And again, you might have actually convinced me to say maybe actually we play Zinchenko, not because Kivior needs a rest or we need to protect anyone, but actually we might need Zinchenko at some point. And yeah, he has the occasional defensive error, but he's still a bloody good player on his day.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got to think at home to Luton, like, you know, the defensive side should be good enough. Like,
exactly. So maybe, yeah, I've gone from like, we should play the same 11 to actually, we should make three changes. So, or three, two changes and go with Jesus. So yeah, that's what I would do. I'd start Zinchenko, start Partey, and then start Martinelli and play Jesus out wide.
Yeah. Yep. I can't really argue with that. I think the bit that I just fundamentally agree with at this point is I do think he probably needs to rotate a little bit against Luton. I think partly just because of freshness, keeping some players fresh, giving some players a break. I feel like it's just the only time we're going to be able to do it. And then every other game, I feel like from then on are going to be games where we just have to almost play the best 11 that we think are going to win that game, basically. So I think this is the only opportunity. Okay, cool. Mate, it was a great conversation. And as always, just enjoyed debriefing with you after a good result. And I do feel it was a good result. And I think you feel it was a good result. And I think most Arsenal fans that I've kind of come across on social media believe it was a good result, despite like a lot of this kind of noise around should we have done more or whatever. Because I think fundamentally at the end of the day, don't win the league at the end of the season, it's not going to be because we only drew at the Etihad, right? I know Charles, I think, you know, it was Russ in the comments who said much earlier in the episode, it would be a shame for us to get 8 points combined from Liverpool and City and us not win the league. I do feel that there's some truth to that, partly because, you know, remember all the years before, the issue with Arsenal was that we were great at beating the crap teams, but we'd lose the league title because we'd never beat the big teams. You know, there was that whole period, I felt, for many years where that was the problem. And now we fundamentally turned that table, right? Where like we are very good against good teams. We've done really, really well this season against the good teams. So it would be a shame. But anyway, my friend, enjoy your week. Well, Arsenal fans everywhere, everyone who's listened to this. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your participation in the episode today, Russ, Charles, and everyone who watched live. So have a great week, Gunners. And it's not long before we're playing again. We're playing again on Wednesday. So, yeah, let's hope we beat Luton. Yeah. See you Wednesday. Cool. All right, guys. See you later.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.